Einstein is reported to have said, "The most important decision we make is whether we believe we live in a friendly or a hostile universe." Now, OCD shifts your beliefs about your safety and your danger, and that changes your life. So let's say there's a reality show in which you're dropped on one of two islands. The first island is Einstein's safe, friendly place. All the inhabitants there are there to support you. You have the resources to do the things you want to do. You feel safe. The second island is Einstein's dangerous, hostile place. All the inhabitants are there to hunt you. There are no places to hide. You feel unsafe all the time. Imagine how much differently your days would unfold in these two places. Think about how differently you would show up. You'd think different thoughts. You'd spend your time in different ways. You'd treat people differently. You'd have a different sense of your ability to control your life. Well, living with unmanaged OCD is like being dropped into that danger-filled island. Your brain regularly delivers messages saying, "Watch out for that threat." But what if you knew and believed that the hunters on the hostile island only carried cap guns? They looked and sounded like real guns, but they pose absolutely no threat. What if you had access to a map that shows you safe places? Your experience on the island would be totally different, because you felt safer. Well, managing OCD is an exercise about shifting your perception of the real threats you face. You can spend more time living as if you were on Einstein's friendly island. In this podcast, I'd like to explore our human response to danger and safety. Then I'd like to offer some tips that will help you spend less time feeling unsafe and more time feeling safe. You can click on the link below to download the worksheet, How to Avoid the Dangers of the Danger Response and Seek Safety More Safely. Welcome to the Free Me From OCD podcast. If you or someone you love has OCD, you know that OCD can hold you hostage. OCD can get in the driver's seat of your life. Here you'll find the information, tips, and tools to put you back in the driver's seat of your life. I'm Dr. Vicki Rackner, your host. I call on my experience as a mother of a son diagnosed with OCD when he was in college, physician, and life coach to help you evolve into the best and highest version of yourself. Let's dive into today's episode. So as always, let's dive in with a story. Barry is a 50-year-old man who lives with his wife and his three children. Barry and his eldest 22-year-old daughter, Summer, share a special closeness. They both carry the diagnosis of OCD. Barry said to me, "Summer was doing great when she left home to go to college. She put in the work and courageously got out there to do scary things. But when the pandemic hit, she really struggled. She moved back home. And as we say in the family, she was spending more and more time in OCD land. She rarely did her ERP work. She spent more time doing her compulsions. She even started having panic attacks when she was alone in the house." Now, Barry explained that all of her life, Summer had begged for a dog. But during the pandemic, his wife relented and took Summer to the pound to adopt a black lab. Summer named him Black Panther, or BP for short. This dog was a godsend for Summer. They were always together. Summer was smiling again. She left the house at least twice a day to walk the dog. She did a much better job of managing her obsessions and compulsions. The panic attacks stopped. Well, how and why did Summer's ability to manage her OCD get worse during the pandemic and then get better when she adopted BP? Well, here's my hypothesis. Summer's ability to manage OCD hinges on how safe she feels. Let me say that again. Your ability to manage your brain, whether or not you've got OCD, and get on with your life depends on whether you feel safe or you feel unsafe. The pandemic shook our sense of safety. How often did you think, this is more than I can handle? When you think that thought, you feel unsafe. When you feel unsafe, you have less power over OCD. No wonder Summer struggled during the pandemic. I'd like to suggest that Summer's dog enhanced her sense of safety. Her brain performed better. Then she had more power over her OCD. I know a woman who, in partnership with her dog, volunteers at a program that helps kids catch up on their reading skills. Someone noticed that some kids make better progress with their reading with the dog on their side. Dogs can tap into this I got it feeling. It improves our performance. Now, I'm not suggesting that you run out and adopt a dog to help manage OCD. However, I am suggesting that you can identify circumstances that lead you to say, I'm in over my head. This is too much. I'm suggesting that you can make investments in things that lead you to say, I got this, and promote your sense of safety. The safer you feel, the more power you have over OCD. You can manage your brain more effectively to live the life you want. This begs a few questions I'll address in this podcast. How and why are we better versions of ourselves when we feel safe than when we feel unsafe? What makes us feel safe and feel unsafe? And how do you spend more of your time feeling safer and living in Einstein's friendly universe? Well, to kick that off, let's just talk about the human brain and the biology of safety. Our brains have genius-level skills for detecting danger and getting back to safety. These brain circuits evolved over millions of years. It gave us the survival advantage 300,000 years ago when we were both predators and prey. Today, we're the apex predator on the planet. Still, we can face immediate threats to our lives. If you're driving and an erratic driver tries to enter your lane, you automatically swerve to avoid a crash. After you're safe in your lane, you might notice that your heart had been racing. You also have instincts about the safety of people around you. I remember being at the airport. I was waiting to board my flight back home after delivering a talk, and a man who attended the conference approached me. He gave me a compliment and then asked me if I wanted a ride home. I got a chill in my spine. My body was shouting no, but my brain tried to override my body, telling me that this guy could be trusted because, after all, we were both part of this small professional community. I accepted his invitation. During the plane ride, though, I decided to listen to my body and decline the offered ride. I'd rather risk embarrassment than risk my physical safety. So you may find yourself responding to danger without thinking a single word. You have a sense, you have a feeling in your body. When our brains detect threats, it sounds the danger alarm, the amygdala. The autonomic nervous system turns on the danger response. It prepares to flee or fight or freeze. Everything else that you were doing, that the body was doing, gets put on hold until we've escaped the predator and get back to safety. Now, there can be a difference between being unsafe and feeling unsafe. In the movie Rain Man, Charlie Babbitt's brother Raymond refused to fly because of his encyclopedic knowledge of all plane crashes. If Raymond simply made transportation choices on the basis of the absolute risk of death, he wouldn't have gotten into the car, driving statistically more dangerous than flying. However, when Ray says, I'm an excellent driver, we learn that he drove his father's car in the driveway when he was a child. He feels safe in the car. So the body sounds the danger alarm whenever there's any question of safety. And once the danger alarm is sounded, your body prepares to fight or flee or freeze. The easiest way to see this orchestrated brain-body danger response is to witness a toddler having a temper tantrum. You know that if you want to talk to your child, you must first calm down your toddler's autonomic nervous system. Sometimes you do that by helping them get the mat out. Sometimes you give them a time out. Sometimes you give them a time in and contain them with a strong embrace. And then once their heart rate's back to normal, you can reason with them. Few adults have temper tantrums. However, our brains and bodies get hijacked in similar ways when the danger response is turned on. You're most likely to behave in cringeworthy ways when you're feeling unsafe. So I'm talking about the general human experience here. Now let's look specifically at the brain of somebody with OCD, like Barry or Summer. Someone with OCD can feel unsafe in circumstances in which neurotypical people feel safe. A person with OCD has a sensitive danger detector that sounds false alarms more frequently. This is like your smoke alarm going off when you boil water. People with OCD set the bar of safety higher. In order to feel safe, they want certainty that they are safe. People with OCD are less likely to challenge their thoughts about threats. They think, I have this thought, so it must be true. And very importantly, people with OCD form danger-related rituals and habits. So cycles of obsessions and compulsions can be performed on a daily basis. They become habits. What happens when you try to break a habit? The brain interprets a pattern disruption as evidence of danger. This sounds the danger alarm that turns on the danger response. So let's get back to the movie Raymond. For Ray, Tuesday was pancake day. Raymond and Charlie were at the restaurant on Tuesday, but there was no syrup on the table as it's supposed to be. Ray was not reassured when Charlie promised that the syrup would be there when he was ready to eat the pancakes. You could see Ray's panic. Something was really wrong for Ray. And it was a really big deal. Just as an aside, no matter who you are or what your brain wiring is, we all share a basic human experience. Someone with a neurodivergent brain is just 3 or 4 standard deviations from the mean. So you might not be on the spectrum or carry a diagnosis of ADHD or OCD. However, I bet you can remember a time at which you felt ill at ease or even panicky when a habit is broken. So these are all things that place somebody with OCD at increased risk for feeling like they're living in a hostile island. Now, in a way, OCD is kind of like the AIDS of neurodiverse brain conditions. There's a lot of disability associated with it. Well, why is AIDS such a deadly virus? It's because the virus attacks the very cells in the immune system that rid the body of infection. Well, feeling unsafe is woven into the fabric of OCD, and feeling unsafe makes it harder to manage your brain. It's a chicken and egg problem. However, AIDS and OCD share something else. They're both treatable. With the right intervention, you can go on and live full and productive lives. So what is that intervention for OCD? How do you disrupt this OCD chicken and egg puzzle? Well, the first step is distinguishing between the things that you control and the things that you cannot control. You cannot control the thoughts that pop into your head. You cannot control whether or not the brain sounds the danger alarm. You cannot control your body's danger response once the danger alarm is sounded. Your autonomic nervous system just prepares your body to flee or fight or freeze. These ancient brain circuits evolved over millions of years. They're on autopilot. But this does not mean that you're destined to be a victim of your danger response. There are many ways that you do have control. You have control about your ability to witness your thoughts and decide whether you're going to swipe right or swipe left on any given thought. You have control over your ability to witness your body in the danger response and then tell a different story about what's happening. You can say, my body is responding to a perceived threat, which may either be a real or a false alarm. You can develop the skill of calming down or revving up your autonomic nervous system so that you return to the physiology of safety. Deep breathing is highly effective, cheap, and always available to you. And here's another point. You can treat your brain as the learning machine it is. Through repetition, we can come to understand that certain situations previously believed to be dangerous can be recategorized as safe. So let's say Hal believes that drinking orange juice from an open container could lead to his death. So he avoids drinking it. He doesn't even like being at the kitchen table when there's an open orange juice container. And he gets anxious when a mental picture of an open orange juice container pops into his head. In essence, ERP, exposure and response avoidance, is an exercise in re-educating the brain. So let's say Hal wants to work on this obsession and compulsion. Hal might begin by being in the same room as an open container of orange juice. At first, this might lead to high levels of anxiety, but after repeated exposures, he doesn't get the racing heart anymore, or at least not as much. Then he might go through the next challenge to touch the container of open orange juice. And again, through repetitions, his danger response will not be as robust. Then after a few repetitions, maybe he pours the orange juice into the glass. And then if he continues this work, one day he will be able to drink this orange juice. So this process of repetition offers the brain evidence. See, this is safe. So the same circumstances are less likely to sound the danger alarm. So here are some action steps that can help you avoid the dangers of the danger response and seek safely more safely. There are body-based interventions and there are brain-based interventions. And let's begin by the body-based interventions. The first step is start paying attention to your body. Check in with your body. At any moment, what sensations are coursing through your body? Identify clues that your danger response is flipped on. Do you feel your heart beating faster? Do your palms sweat? Do you have a sense of dread or doom? Maybe you become irritable or even overwhelmed. Next, you can relabel the danger response. When you find your body's physiology shifting to the danger response, you might now say, I feel anxious. Instead, say, my heart is pounding and my palms are sweaty. My body thinks I'm in danger. Next, you can explore ways you can proactively decrease the risk of your body turning on the danger response. Get curious about the connection between being hungry or thirsty or tired on your danger response. Is your OCD easier to manage when you eat healthfully or exercise regularly or get adequate rest? I invite you to watch Amy Cuddy's TED Talk, Your Body Language Shapes Who You Are. She points out that thoughts and feeling inform our body language. When we're happy, we tend to smile. However, she has clinical evidence that our body language informs our thoughts and feelings. You can feel more powerful by intentionally expanding your body. Try this experiment, she suggests, of assuming the Wonder Woman pose for 2 minutes. Does that have any impact on your OCD? Next, make a list of things that you can do to shift your autonomic nervous system back into the balance zone of safety. Maybe it's breathing or moving your body or screaming. As you practice, you will get better at this. So you can't control if the danger switch is flipped on, but there are things that you can learn to do to turn it off. Now, sometimes you might find that there's absolutely nothing that you can do to shift out of the danger response. This is the clinical definition of trauma. So when I asked Barry to describe Summer's panic attacks, here's what he told me. When she was very young, the family came home to discover that their house had been robbed. And the robbers took a gold necklace Summer's grandmother gave to her. Then her grandmother died really tragically and alone of COVID early on in the pandemic. So I wonder, could Summer's panic attacks be a trauma response to either the robbery or her grandmother's death, or maybe both? If so, if there is a trauma response, some specific therapeutic interventions can heal this PTSD. That's the first step. And I'll leave a link to my podcast episode about trauma. All right, now let's address brain-based interventions. The first thing you want to do is just start paying attention to your brain. Witness your brain at work. Imagine that you're in the corner of a room and your thoughts kind of unfold like a sitcom of your life. So you can explore the question, what circumstances lead to my feeling unsafe? Each individual has a unique set of situations that trigger this danger alarm. So Diane told me that she feels unsafe if her pantry isn't fully stocked. She said her husband freaks out whenever they need to spend money on car or home maintenance repairs. Some people feel their hearts race when they think about meeting new people or driving to new destinations or giving a talk. Once you understand the specific triggers, you can make a plan. So Diane talks about the day that she went to cook pasta puttanesca and she discovered that she was out of canned tomatoes. So her body went into a full flight mode. Then she did some self-coaching. She put her hand over her heart and said, okay, my body flipped on the danger response. I got this. I'll just walk to the store and buy another can. And the walking helped calm down the autonomic nervous system. And she also avoided judging herself because she had responded to this perceived threat. She said, this is a human response. This is what I do. But I have some agency over my life. There's something that I can do to intervene. Now, you also want to be able to assess the real risks in any circumstance. So Jim lost his job during the pandemic and he was devastated as anyone would be. However, it went further. He describes waking up at 3 a.m. in a panic thinking, I'm going to be homeless. I asked Jim about his financial reality. What were the numbers? And I wouldn't be able to ask him that when he was in a state of panic, right? Because when the danger response is flipped on, the only three things that you can do are fight, flee, or freeze. So I was asking Jim to elevate up to his planning brain, his prefrontal cortex. Okay, so this is what he told me about his financial reality. He'd planned for emergencies. He had a year of savings. He had a list of ways that he can earn money within 10 days. So his panic was not caused by the lack of a money management plan. Objectively, Jim had a financial safety net. He felt unsafe because of a lack of a brain management plan. So he hadn't thought about what thoughts he would think. And his thoughts were leading to his sense of danger. So to feel safer, Jim practiced a new thought. I prepared for emergencies. My family is safe. You might want to also think about how you can consciously craft your environment for safety. Be discerning about where your attention goes. How much news do you want to expose yourself to? How much time do you want to spend on social media? How safe do you feel with the people in your life? And then have your own back when you respond to danger alarms as if they were real. So someone who, like Summer, who's doing really well with OCD in general, may give in to a new compulsion. Don't beat up on yourself. Instead, put a hand over your heart and say, "How human of me, I'll do better next time." Next, you can get back to something that I just alluded to. Explore the question, what thoughts made me feel unsafe? So your feelings of safety and danger come from your thoughts. So here are some thoughts that may or may not pass through your conscious mind. One thought is, it's unsafe to feel certain feelings. So people with OCD come to fear their anxiety triggered by their obsessions. They have the thought that the anxiety itself is dangerous. So here's how to promote a sense of safety. Give yourself permission to name and feel any feeling that you have. So the best OCD therapeutic intervention, ERP, is an exercise of allowing yourself to feel the anxiety wash over you and see that you don't die. It goes away on its own. This is part of the learning that the brain goes through. Once you know that you can live through any feeling that comes your way, you live more courageously. The second big thought is, it's unsafe to think certain thoughts. So anyone with OCD, if you ask them, if you had a magic wand, what would you wish for? They'd say, I just want somebody to take away these obsessive thoughts. They come to believe that the simple presence of a thought represents danger. Well, you've heard teachers say, there's no such thing as the dumb question. Your human brain would like you to believe there's no such thing as a dumb thought. But there are dumb thoughts and dumb questions. And you get to choose the questions and thoughts that you give your power to. So to feel safer, remember that you have the power to swipe left or swipe right on any thought that you have. Maybe you learn a new thought, like my brain lies all the time, to remind you of your own power. A very, very common thought to trigger danger is, it's unsafe to be alone. So isolation can trigger the danger response as it did with Summer. Now, we can understand this through the lens of evolution. When we were hunter-gatherers, being ejected from the tribe was a death sentence. Of course, we would respond to the mandated social distancing during the pandemic as if we were facing death. Well, when Summer adopted her dog, she wasn't alone anymore. She had a constant companion. So to promote your sense of safety, identify at least one person or creature with the qualities of Summer's dog. They're excited to see you. They see the best in you. They celebrate you. They believe in you. Another common thought to trigger the danger response is, it's unsafe to ask for what I want. You might have learned as a child that it's dangerous to ask for what you want. Another person could get mad at you or even reject you. You could then wind up alone. The danger of social rejection is so high that we actually have a fourth danger behavior called fawning. So you abandoned your own needs to serve others. You conduct yourself in a way that avoids others criticizing you or creating conflict or inciting disapproval. So you try to control what somebody else does. People pleasing is a form of fawning. It arises from a lack of personal power. It's a way of making an unsafe situation feel safer. But almost always, people pleasing does more harm than good. If you want to feel safer, heal people pleasing. All right, well, here are some other thoughts that can turn on the danger response. It's unsafe to try new things. It's unsafe to meet new people. It's unsafe to fail. It's unsafe to love. It's unsafe to be vulnerable. And here is a very common yet heartbreaking thought. It's unsafe to be me. Many people with neurodivergent brains, whether it's OCD or ADHD or being on the spectrum, think that they need to hide. The truth is that we live in a world designed for people with neurotypical brains. It's hard to live and thrive with OCD. It's hard to parent a child with OCD and witness their challenges. Well, there might be good reasons that Black Panther is one of summer's favorite movies. T'Challa, heir to the hidden kingdom of Wakanda, must lead his people into a new future. And he faces the existential question about whether it's safe to allow the world to know about the powers of vibranium. What if each way you or your child is different, is their own vibranium? Every way your child is challenged or threatened offer clues to their hidden powers. Our goal is finding places in which it's safe to be who you are. This is the reason I formed the OCD Haven. It's a safe place to learn about what it means to have OCD brain wiring, or what it means to love or parent or teach somebody with OCD. So you can decide today that you will craft your life so you're spending more time in Einstein's friendly world. Now, you have some concrete ideas about how to do it. These ideas are not meant as a substitute for the care of your therapist who knows you. In fact, you might want to bring this podcast to your therapist and decide which ideas you will act on. Please reach out and share what interventions you'll try. Let us know whether it's making a difference. That's what I have for you today. I want to thank you for your listening ears and listening eyes if you're consuming this podcast on YouTube. Let me leave you with a final thought. Many families touched by OCD feel alone in their struggles. They're suffering in silence. They don't need to. If you found this information helpful, please feel welcome to share it with your friends and family and communities in which you participate. Please leave a review of this podcast. That makes it easier for people who need this message to find it. Let's get the message out that people touched by OCD are not alone, and there is hope. Thank you again for your investment in your family and in yourself. You got this.